ambiguous. People are trying to make things unclear. People are trying to make wrong things that are not true. They are false. They didn't happen. Make them seem like they are true. They are real. They did happen. And things that did happen, things that are true, are going to be presented as false. Things that didn't happen, things that aren't true. The period of the governance of Ali ibn Abi Talib was filled with that. Muawiyah's war against Amir al-Mu'mineen was not a military conflict. On a military conflict level, they lost the battle. Although they were outnumbering Amir al-Mu'mineen's followers. According to the accounts, Amir al-Mu'mineen had 45,000 troops. Muawiyah had 75,000 troops. Amir al-Mu'mineen defeated them. That wasn't an issue. They didn't lose a military conflict. When Amir al-Mu'mineen's followers lost to Muawiyah, not Amir al-Mu'mineen himself, his followers, what they lost was not the military conflict. It was the propaganda campaign which caused the followers of Amir al-Mu'mineen not to proceed to final victory. In that case, and afterwards, the development of Khawarij after Siffin, that's where it started cooking up. It's this idea. Muawiyah created an environment where what Amir al-Mu'mineen said, what he did, what his companions said, what they did, what the governors of Ali ibn Abi Talib said or did, was disputed. It was unclear. And things that they didn't do was presented as though they definitely did it. One of those lies that was the whole basis of Muawiyah being able to gather people in Sham against Ali ibn Abi Talib, including some of the companions of the Prophet, some of the Qurra of the Quran, some of the worshippers, the lie that was sold was that Ali ibn Abi Talib was responsible for the death of Uthman. Everybody's heard that, right? That's the biggest lie anyone could sell in history, because the fact of the matter was, the only person that actually defended Uthman was Ali ibn Abi Talib. In different ways. When first the rebels, or the believers actually, who had serious problems with what Uthman was doing, gathered in Medina, Amir al-Mu'mineen intervened. He went and spoke. He took their complaints, spoke to Uthman, because after they had a discussion, they got really angry and was going in a direction that was not healthy for the nation. Amir al-Mu'mineen went in. He spoke to both parties, convinced Uthman these are things that you need to change, convinced them that this is going to happen. Egyptians went back towards Egypt. On the way, not Uthman, his son-in-law, Marwan ibn al-Hakam, wrote a letter to the governor of Egypt. Once they arrived, these people, behead all of them. That individual was caught on the way by these people. They saw the message. Like, see? Went back to Medina. Showed it to Amir al-Mu'mineen. Like, look, Amir al-Mu'mineen again intervened. It came to a point where Amir al-Mu'mineen was speaking to both sides. Neither side was listening. Uthman wasn't listening. And the believers that had gathered from Kufa and Egypt weren't listening either. And it was going towards something that clearly was going to be having an ugly ending. Amir al-Mu'mineen warned. Once he saw nobody's listening to him, according to the accounts, he left Medina. Because there's nothing else he can do. He can't get involved in it. Neither party is listening, so he left Medina. According to some accounts, when they cut off water to Uthman, it was actually Amir al-Mu'mineen sending his sons to provide water for Uthman. Okay, that's the truth of what happened in Medina. The complete opposite is being sold as fact to the people in Sham. Now, you can understand people in Sham. Okay, they're under the direct influence of the propaganda of Muawiyah. Similar to us. We are directly under the influence of the Zionist media here. Whatever you hear the Zionist media saying, believe the opposite is true. Zionist media does not want to tell you what the truth is. I think they're the ones who taught Muawiyah how to do this. Okay, so you understand, all right, those were the people in Sham. They were under that influence. 75,000 people. Just do the math. Let me spend a little bit of time on this point. Did you know most of the ummah of the Prophet, most of the land and most of the people that lived under the Islamic government were under the rule of Ali ibn Abi Talib, not Muawiyah. Muawiyah ruled over only Sham. Compared to the rest of it, all of Egypt and northern Africa that they controlled at the time, all of Arabia, all of the parts of Persia that they had already conquered, Azerbaijan, all of that was under Amir al-Mu'mineen's rule. Yet how many people did Amir al-Mu'mineen take with him to Siffin? Now he probably didn't want to take any more. The people that went with him, 45,000 people. Muawiyah gathered 75,000 people based on a lie. That's not my point. Those are people that are under the direct influence of Muawiyah propaganda. But in Kufa, Kufa is where Ali ibn Abi Talib is present. Let's understand this. Ali ibn Abi Talib is present. Ali ibn Abi Talib speaks to the people. Every rumor that goes around, Amir al-Mu'mineen goes out and speaks publicly. This is the truth of the matter. This is actually what happened. This is what this is. He clarified in the context. This is called fitna, right? When things are being made ambiguous, when people are spreading lies, flipping truths, presenting truth as falsehood and falsehood as truth, going and doing that, this is called fitna. The Quran says, "Al-fitnatu akbar min al-qatl." Fitna is worse than qatl. Why? Because through fitna, many more people will get killed. If you kill one person, it's one person. But with fitna, you kill the minds, the hearts, and the physical lives of people. That's what happens with fitna. What are we supposed to do in the context of fitna? Clarify. They're making truth look like falsehood, and falsehood look like truth. We, who understand what the truth actually is, you go out and explain, elaborate, clarify. Amir al-Mu'mineen did that. Amir al-Mu'mineen did that. The problem is insight. People realizing. People understanding. Truth is being presented. The other side is being presented as well. Falsehood is being presented as well. Every individual has got to look at that, identify the truth. Identify what the reality of the situation is. Identify who the liar is. Because if you don't identify that, you will get confused. Like, oh, this person is saying this, that person is saying that. I'm not sure which is true. You know what? I'll just leave it. And you think that's a good stance to take? No. That was the problem. In Siffin, for example, it's not like the majority of the 45,000, those who were still alive, because people lost their lives and there were injured people there too, whoever remained. It's not like all of them gathered with the Khawarij, with the Munafiq Ash'ath ibn Qais al-Mal'un. It's not like all of them gathered there with their swords against Ali ibn Abi Talib. They don't need all of that. Obviously, Malik with a small group of people were fighting. They were getting closer and closer to the tent of Muawiyah. That's one group that's not part of this. But even the rest of them, it's not like all of them had that. you probably had probably the majority, a little over at least 50% of those who were there that were confused. They didn't take a stance. They didn't support Ali. A small group led by the Munafiq, that for another time, we don't have time to explain how the role that this Munafiq, Ash'ath ibn Qais, played in that. It wasn't like some just people on the side of Amir al-Mu'mineen suddenly just developed this thing against Ali ibn Abi Talib. No, this Munafiq played a role. Letters were written to him. Promises were made to him. He played along with that on Amir al-Mu'mineen side. But that's besides the point. A few people are convinced, for whatever reason, to go against Ali ibn Abi Talib. The rest of the people, if they would have defended Amir al-Mu'mineen, what happened there wouldn't have happened. Why did that happen? Because the majority remained silent. When we get confused, we don't necessarily join the wrong side by going and participating and doing that wrong, taking swords against Ali ibn Abi Talib. But the very fact that we don't take our sword in support of Ali ibn Abi Talib means in the end, Ali ibn Abi Talib is going to be defeated in that way. His army. Confusion. Not knowing what's right and what's wrong. Not knowing. And then, once you enter that state of confusion, then more and more lies are going to be brought to you where you really start doubting everything. Every little thing is going to be doubted. Are we even Shia? What is Shia? It can come to that. This is not history for just looking at it and analyzing what happened then. It is relevant to us. Today, this is happening. This is happening. We can give plenty of examples of where the same confusion led to what type of problems? Maraja were hanged, killed publicly in a Shia country, and nobody said anything. And where that didn't happen, people did have insight. People did understand. And with that understanding, the wrong didn't happen. The believers proceeded. They moved forward. Okay. Recite a salawat, please. Every little thing was being doubted. Amir al-Mu'mineen talked about his role as the successor to the Prophet. 25 years, he didn't speak about that publicly. For the Ummah, for Allah, for the sake of God. After the first days or weeks that he tried to gather support and make sure what happened is undone, and he didn't get the support, after that, he didn't speak about it. After 25 years, now there's an opportunity for Allah, not for himself to say, oh, I was this or that or whatever. No, for Allah. It's necessary for the people to understand this. In Kufa, he explained and he asked all of those who were there, stand and testify. So that it's clear for the people. Anas, who was very well respected in certain schools of thought, Anas, the companion of the Prophet, he didn't stand. Ali ibn Abi Talib told him, Anas, you were there. Why didn't you stand? He cursed him. If everybody who was there, if you know the truth, you stand and you just speak that truth, you say it. When others are creating doubts, and this is one of the areas, this is one of the areas of basira that is very necessary. Very necessary. I know as Shia we repeat this for historic figures. We don't relate to it at that time, and we can't bring that to today, unfortunately. One of the areas, this one example that I just gave you, this is one area of Basira that is extremely important. Who is who? One thing is, okay, what's this person saying? All right, let me elaborate on this idea. So you hear something on the news. Fox News says something. Now, some people have reached maturity enough to know what Fox News says is probably not true. Okay. Some people have reached that. But if BBC says it, no, they are, BBC is objective. And somehow it's not created by the British Empire. And somehow it's not supported by the British royalty and all of that. And somehow it doesn't have that agenda. They've become the most pious people on earth. And they just want to present to you the truth. So the BBC says something, and then Press TV says something else. There's two different news agencies. And then you see believers, they're arguing about what this is saying. Is this true? Is that? People get confused trying to figure out which is true and which is not. And some people, for some reason, using those examples, some people are like, yeah, the best objective media outlet is RT, Russian TV or Russia TV or whatever it is, RT. Okay. Well, all right, there's some truths that come from there. The same way that BBC presents some truths as well. Okay. BBC definitely does. There's a hadith from... BBC doesn't give hadith. There's a hadith from the Ahlul Bayt. It said the angel, Iblis, la'anatullah, I went to Jesus. You may have heard it. I've said this many times. It's a very, very good example for us to learn from. Iblis, right, went to Jesus and he said, I got five pieces of advice for you. Iblis. So he started the first one. Jesus listened to it. Like, great. Second, great. Third, great. Fourth, great. You want to say the fifth one? Jesus said, stop. I don't want you to tell me the fifth one. You gave me four good advice so you can gain my trust and trick me on the fifth one. 80% truth. 80% truth for 20% lies for you to believe that 20%, because that 20% is what is going to get you to go where they want you to. Amir al-Mu'mineen says in a hadith about fitna. He says, if it was only haq and everybody was saying haq, lam yakun ikhtilaf, there would be no dispute. And if the other side was only giving lies, nobody would believe them. Lam yukhaf ala dhi hijja. Anyone with a little bit of intellect, obviously, that's why, alhamdulillah, there's enough intelligent people or people with enough intelligence to understand that Fox is baloney. Okay. Because most of what they say is just like, it doesn't make sense. The point is, when we hear pieces of information, we start getting confused. Is this true? Is this not true? You know what's more important than that? The Quran stresses on the source of that information. Who said this? Where did it come from? If Ali ibn Abi Talib says something, that's definitely true. That was the fact he was trying to suggest to the people. Said, look, this is what the Prophet appointed this individual to lead and to succeed him after him. Listen to him. Whoever was there, stand up and testify to it. That testimony will cause people to trust this source of information. And when Ali says, this is who Muawiyah is, you're not going to be like, oh, Ali says Muawiyah is like this. Muawiyah says Ali is like this. We don't know who's who. We're going to leave both of them. You guys go and fight your own war. See what happens? Ibn Muljam with two other individuals, they swore by the house of God. These are the troublemakers. Muawiyah, Ali ibn Abi Talib, Amr ibn As. So these are the troublemakers. They made an oath, a pledge, that they're going to kill all three of them. He says something against him. He says, identify who Ali is. If Ali says Muawiyah is like that, Muawiyah is like that. If Muawiyah says this about Ali ibn Abi Talib, no, Muawiyah is a liar. Muawiyah is of the tulaqa. Identify who's who. Identify who the source of information is. And trust the one that you're supposed to trust. The one that God says trust. And distrust the one that you're... God says in the Quran, another... These are all Quranic teachings that we have. God says Iblis, Shaitan, which of course the word Shaitan is more inclusive than just Iblis. We usually apply that to Iblis. But it includes all of those who do the same thing. What does Shaitan do? Deceive. His work is deception. It says, look, Shaitan is your enemy. You treat him as an enemy. What do you mean by that? Take a sword, kill him? Well, that's going to happen at the time of the Imam of our time. We have that in Hadith. Okay, Iblis will be, the world will get rid of Iblis once and for all during the coming of the 12th Imam. Well, that's not what the thing we've been told. What we've been told is, do not trust him. You never trust your enemy. Never trust your enemy. He is your enemy. God keeps saying this. He is your enemy. Adam's problem when he disobeyed God was that he trusted Iblis. God afterwards said, didn't I tell you? He's your manifest enemy. He's your clear enemy. He came and sweet talked you into it and said, I'm trying to do good for you. Believe me. Trust me. I'm saying this for your own good. Repeating that so many times, saying it in a way psychologically, you start thinking, you know, yeah, sounds right. You go and do it. Biggest problem, the Quran says you trust it, trusting your enemy. Identify the enemy, identify your wali, identify awliyaullah, identify the friends of God, identify the believers that according to the Quran, المؤمنون والمؤمنات بعضهم أولياء بعض. We have the relationship of wilaya with one another. We are friends. Ethnicity, nationality, none of that is important. Believers are إنما المؤمنون إخوة. So this is the group of people we're supposed to trust. And the other side, people who have destroyed all of humanity, even outside of the Muslim world, don't trust. What's the state of affairs of the Muslim Ummah right now? For the most part, as far as we can see, apparently, isn't it sort of reversed? Even in our just day-to-day lives and you know, joking and all of that, we're almost teaching each other, you can't trust another Muslim. Go do business with non-Muslims. You can't trust a believer. Why? Because one believer cheated. Okay. This one person cheated, like, never trust a believer. Go do business with Jews. They're the best people to do business with. What is this culture? Isn't this except for Shaitan? We're supposed to trust believers. Yeah, some people make mistakes. They're the ones, the Jewish people, for the most part, they are the ones who have tricked all of humanity in so many different ways. They are probably paying the least amount of tax in this country, and they are in control of how the tax money is being spent. How much of it goes to the Zionist regime? How much of it goes for their other interests domestically and internationally? And they know better than anyone all the tax loopholes. They're cheating more than anyone else. the word and Shia community and the community of believers is trust them, don't trust your own brother. That's against what the Quran says. You can never trust the word of a believer. And then on a greater scale, when it comes to news, when it comes to media, again, what's objective media? CNN is, BBC is. What about the believers? What about the believers? Whether it's Press TV or the believers in Iraq that have satellite channels and they're presenting information, or whoever else, believers. It's the other way around. The perspective we are getting, we are being told, and subconsciously, even revolutionary people, people who believe in the revolution, who understand, they believe it because they understand what it is, they start having doubts. When they hear something from this source of information, they doubt. When it comes from CNN, when it comes from NPR, like, oh, this is objective journalism. And the funny thing is, the whole world, including themselves, are saying, look, they sell lies. Everybody knows. Now, a lot of people are not willing to talk about 9/11 and say that was a big lie that was sold. All right, whatever on that. Everybody understands. It's crystal clear. The whole establishment, along with the media outlets, sold the lie of Iraq having weapons of mass destruction and going into Iraq. The whole world knows. Why do you still trust? This is the problem that Amir al-Mu'mineen was dealing with. And this is the problem that the Imam of our time is dealing with. Because he is alive. He is living with us. He is moving forward. He does have enemies. What? Unfortunately, the believers are being told that the enemy of the Imam is who? The Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the enemy of the Iran, of the Imam. And who are the friends of the Imam? I guess everybody else. Really? What is the Imam going? The Imam comes, Bibi says something. If we move forward the way we are, at least we will be confused. He says, join in Mecca. This is a terrorist that is planning something in the Kaaba. Saudi regime is getting this, that, the other. And then some Shias are going to be like, maybe he is. At least, maybe he is. Maybe this is a terrorist. How do we know? Then I'll go and ask this random Muammam that I don't even know where he's from and where he got his information. Can we trust that that's the Imam? And he may have some doubts there. And God forbid, if they're on the other side, like some people are, I'll say, no, no, no. There are signs, and those signs we haven't seen. So it's not the 12th Imam. And they'll refer some hadith. You don't know the language, or you don't know hadith. I'm like, okay, Maulana said it. What happens? Yeah, we may not pick up arms and go and fight him there, but we didn't join him. And of course, with the 12th Imam, it'll be different. He will win. We will be misfortunate not to be there with him if that happens. And we do have this in hadith. For the God knows how manyth time these hadith need to be mentioned and we need to be reminded. It says when the Imam comes, those who think he's from amongst them, the Shia, will leave. Abadatu Shams. People who worship the sun, in other words, non-Muslims, they will join him. They will join him. Doesn't mean all Shias were. No, there are some. There are some that are going to. God forbid if we're like that. What led the Khawarij to think that the man who manifests the Quran, Ali ibn Abi Talib, when they put the Qurans in the spears, he said, I am the Quran. And he is the Quran. they came to the understanding that he is the enemy of the Quran and must be killed. In addition to the problem we mentioned yesterday, which is important to understand, this idea, this confusion, all of the things, all the lies Muawiyah spread through his stooges in Kufa against Ali ibn Abi Talib, against things that they witnessed even themselves, putting the blame on Ali ibn Abi Talib instead of on the ones who were worthy of blame. People getting confused to the extent that, see the opposite, see the irony of this? There's a time where people think, I'm the enemy of the Quran. Okay, I'm a nobody. But Ali ibn Abi Talib, the enemy of the Quran? The manifestation of the Quran, identify him as the enemy of the Quran? How confused can you be? And they can do that. And we fall for it. Sometimes, and we have to be very careful with this. Look, the imam of our time and our imams, they created the institution of the Hawza. I've discussed this extensively in other places. Here I discussed it briefly in some other session before the month of Ramadan. The Ahlul Bayt created the Hawza. And they knew that the imam is going to go in occultation. And during that occultation, the same way that the Prophet didn't leave the Ummah without someone, when he is gone, when he is not in Medina, he would never leave without appointing someone. The 12th Imam would never leave without appointing someone. The first period, the minor occultation, there were individuals that were named. After the end of the minor occultation, they said, that's it, by naming individuals, that's over. But the general principle is given. During the time of the occultation, from this point onwards, أَمَّا الْحَوَادِثُ الْوَاقِعَ فَارْجَعُوا فِيهَا إِلَى رُوَاتِ حَدِيثِنَا. What you used to come to us for, go to our students, our pious students, refer to them. The imams have said this. And throughout the history of tashayyu', this is what the Shias have done. Correctly understanding this from the Ahlul Bayt, Salamullah alayhim ajma'in. Now in this era, where Islam is on the rise, the Islam of the Ahlul Bayt is on the rise. Okay. During the period of the Ahlul Bayt, the Islam of the Ahlul Bayt was suppressed. The Islam of the Ahlul Bayt did not have power. After that period, when the colonialists came in, all of Islam went under the authority of the Kuffar, unfortunately. From about 150 years ago. Whether it's India, where those who are from that region know Muslims were in charge, at least in some major areas. The British came in, the colonialists came in, Muslims went under, the colonialists were in charge. In Arabia, the same thing. The Ottoman Empire fell. None of those were Islamic governments in the true sense of the word, and they weren't the Islam of the Ahlul Bayt. But they were still Muslims. But then Kuffar came and controlled. And then in that darkest of ages for the Muslim Ummah, the Islam of the Ahlul Bayt started to rise. You're seeing it. Muslims are proud. When the revolution succeeded, all believers worldwide were proud. I wasn't alive then, but I have checked with every reference that I can, including those who went through the experience in different parts of the world, the African continent, in Europe, in America, in the Middle East, and elsewhere. Muslims were proud. When other events took place, we all remember the 2006 war. Zionists got kicked really hard. All Muslims were happy, made everybody proud. Who was it? Islam of the Ahlul Bayt. Led by the ulama that the Ahlul Bayt trained. Who's against them? The same colonialists that have changed. They don't call it colonies. They don't call it colonization. They speak negatively of that. But the same idea is still happening through puppet governments. In Africa, read that history. Africans revolted against the slave master, took control. But over time, through economic warfare, they came back in, they have control. I've visited African countries. I've seen this firsthand. These colonialists are fighting the Islam that's on the rise. One of the things that they're doing is that the ones that the Ahlul Bayt said during the occultation, you need to trust, they are saying you shouldn't trust. That's a net result of so many different things. Voices from within the Shia community speaking low against scholars. Look, I am nobody. I am not a scholar. If I can claim to be a Hawza student, inshallah, maybe Allah accepts that I try to study something, learn a little something. Ulama there, you have to trust. Speaking in a way that belittles ilm and ulama, this goes against the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. And it works into the plan of the enemies of Islam. Speaking against marja'iyya, speaking in a way that it sounds like maraja are at war with one another. Speaking in a way where it seems like these maraja are trying to fight for influence. This person's got Iraq, the other has Iran, now they're fighting who's got which. This entire language and thought process is filthy, it's toxic, it's shaitanic, it's from the Iblis himself. Institution of the Hawza, whether it's in Najaf, in Qum, in Baghdad, once upon a time in Samarra, in Hilla, in Lebanon, in other cities of Iran, once upon a time in India, a strong Hawza that the colonialists destroyed. And there are still Hawzas there. I had students from India when I was in Qum. We had conversations, many conversations. Those houses are not what they used to be. There were maraja in India, in the subcontinent. This is pre-division. What we're talking about is not, it's the Indian subcontinent, which includes the various countries that are there. We had strong maraja there, strong houses there. Some of the greatest libraries of Shia books are in India. Where is it? Why is there an Akhbari movement in India? Why is there an anti-ulama movement in Pakistan? Is that what the Ahlul Bayt want? Is that what they preached? Is that what they taught? This is that basira, the trusted source. Identify what the trusted source is. Know that what comes from here, what comes from pious ulama, maraja', identify them, because they'll try to create phony ones too. There are some who claim marja'iyya. They're not maraja'. There was one of them, la'natullah alayh, Ayatollah Khoui issued a statement against him. Said this person is questionable. Believers in Arusha, in East Africa, they were trying to create a Hawza there. And there were some people said these people are not legit. They were following Ayatollah Khoui. They sent a letter to Ayatollah Khoui. They said, you know, these people are trying to create a Hawza here. What should we do? He wrote the letter back that these people are questionable. You don't go by them. You don't follow them. They're not maraja. They claim to be maraja. They'll do that. They will do that. They have done it in the past. Identify pious ulama, maraja, like Ayatollah Khamenei, like Ayatollah Sistani, like the other major Ayatollahs that we have in Najaf, in Qom, in other cities as well, of these two countries and other countries. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, he's not identified as a marja. He's a pious alim. Don't see him only for as the head of Hezbollah and the war and so on. He's a pious scholar. These are scholars that are trusted. They're pious scholars, pious students of the Ahlul Bayt, pious narrators of hadith, as the hadith goes from the imams. Identify them. Know what they say is right. If they say something, somebody says the opposite of it. And who is that other person who says the opposite? It's the enemies of Islam. Or if the person doesn't look like the enemies, it's got one of these turbans on his head, what he says is what they say. The same group of people against, and shouldn't get confused when something like that happens. Don't get confused. These guys, what they say is right, we're going to go with that. But these guys are louder, they're showing imagery. And my God, that imagery, it's so deceptive. They'll show images and like, yeah, they're killing people in Tehran. The images are not even from Iran. Showing images of people getting killed in Syria. And the whole, unfortunately, they convince the majority of the Muslim population that the Syrian government is the most brutal government. What happened to Hosni Mubarak? What happened to the Bahraini government, the Saudi government? What happened to the Israelis? Bashar Assad becomes the most brutal person? All the regimes that are supported by the West, they're the most brutal systems and governments in the region. And the imagery that they were showing was all staged. They were like, oh, there's a clip there. It must be true. In the age of Hollywood, it must be true. How is that? Sources of information, brothers and sisters, don't get confused on bits and pieces of information and misinformation. Identify trustworthy sources, and based on that, identify what to trust. What comes from them must be trusted, because Allah said, the Ahlul Bayt said, this is what you trust. The enemies of Islam, you don't trust. They say something, yeah, maybe true, but I don't need to worry about it. I don't need to trust it. This side is what I need to trust. And inshallah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on these nights helps us develop that as individuals and within our communities. And our communities get stronger and stronger. And in this way, we prepare for the coming of the Imam of our time. Sallallahu alayka ya amir al-mu'mineen. Ruhi fidak. These are the difficult days and nights of the Ahlul Bayt. Sallallahu alayk. Ya Amir al-Mu'minin. صلى الله عليك يا أول مظلوم صلى الله عليك يا وصي رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا مولاي These are difficult nights and days for the Ahlul Bayt. Let's take our hearts to Kufa. Let's first pay a visit to the Haram of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Try to picture yourselves there, entering the beautiful courtyard. صلى الله عليك يا أمير المؤمنين. Thank you for inviting us to come to your haram. You are the father of all believers. Your haram is the home to all believers. Inshallah, we get to visit again and again and again. I don't know if you've noticed, when you go there, it's one of the smallest shrines that we have. Yet it feels so warm. So home-like, all believers find their spot there. You want to speak to the Imam, pour your heart out for the Imam. You feel his presence. Sallallahu alayhi. Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. Let's go to the house of the Ahlul Bayt in Kufa. This morning, Zainab salamullahi alayha, Umm Kulthum, are in the house awaiting their father to come back from the prayer. They don't know what's happened in the masjid. All they saw was that when their father was leaving, it felt different. He was whispering things. The birds tried to stop him. Hujr ibn Adi came looking for our father to warn him not to go to the masjid. What's happening? They're probably worried. In the masjid, tahaddamat wallah arkanul huda. The call was heard, Fuztu wa Rabbil Ka'ba, Amirul Mu'mineen. His beard, his white, beautiful beard, was colored red with the blood of his head. I don't know if you've been in a situation where you've lost blood. You get weak. I don't know how the mal'oon hit Amir al-Mu'mineen on the head. The doctor had to put something inside. That's how deep the cut was. No wonder they started carrying him on their arms. Towards the house,
But when they got close to the house, Amir al-Mu'mineen realized, he told them, put me down, I want to walk to the house. They said, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, your health is not fit for this. He said, I don't want Zainab to see me like this. Ru'ifadaka Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. You didn't want Zainab to see you being held by others carried to your house. Where were you in Karbala? When Zainab heard the horse of Hussein, she came out of her tent seeing the horses without its rider. Wa Muhammada, wa Aliyah, she ran to find a place to find her beloved Hussein. She arrived on Talu Zainabiyya to see what Shimr Jalisun ala Sadre. روحي فداكم روحي فداكم ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا حسين.